Welcome to the Full Press Packers Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra. Joining me is Jesse Hall. How are you doing?
Victory Monday, number one seed. I'm doing pretty good.
The regular season for the Green Bay Packers went about as well as it could have. Like you mentioned, they got the number one seed. They've got that first round bye in the playoffs. It did come down to this week 17 victory against the Bears, 35-16. You know, kind of like doubling up on a division rival score. That's always nice.
Got that right.
And while, you know, as well as you can, you get the first round bye, home field throughout the playoffs. Packers are set to go straight to the divisional round now. That's everything you could hope for. And you basically got through the whole season without any real major injuries. Lane Taylor being really the biggest one up to that point, I would say, in terms of someone that's out for the year. But, Week 17 Thursday practice, a walkthrough day even, apparently, and David Bakhtiari tore his ACL and is out for the year. This is just a massive blow, and I heard this news Thursday. It kind of took out all the excitement of this week, just knowing, okay, last week of the season playing the Bears, I was pretty hyped, I was pretty energetic and giddy, and then it just somber mood for me for the rest of the week football-wise, and, you know, watching those 1 o'clock games was nice, but she kind of left me in a little sour place, naturally.
Yeah, thank you. One more thing from 2020 to, you know, leave us with, I guess. yeah, terrible news. Walkthrough. I mean, it couldn't happen to a better team player and, frankly, the best tackle in the league. So, it wasn't good, but soldier on.
Soldier on to Soldier Field. And knowing that Bakhtiari has been so key to the Packers' recent success against the Bears, I mean, he's completely annihilated Khalil Mack from game plans at times. And I remember last year there was one sack he allowed, and it was Leonard Floyd, right? And who's not there with the Bears anymore, right? So knowing that because he's been such a factor against Khalil Mack, how is that going to affect? So I went into this game nervous. This is a game the Packers could lose. If the pass rush for the Bears gets out of control and the pressure gets to Rodgers too much and they can't score, I mean, are they only going to be able to muster 10 points? And, you know, the Bears scored 16, so if that was the case, they wouldn't have won. But I got to say, Billy Turner playing left tackle, it's not the first time he's done it this year. This was probably his toughest test at left tackle. He allowed some pressures. You could tell that's where anything that was wrong with the line, it was usually coming from Turner. But I thought he did pretty well, considering, I don't know, but just specifically with Turner, having to go from right tackle, left tackle. Do you think he did all right, did decent enough, I think? What do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, so, well, first off, like you're saying, you know, about scoring, I just think, you know, I was more worried, like, with game plan. You know, do you have Mercedes Lewis on that side the whole game, and then, you know, it kind of eliminates one of your pass catchers, or is everything got to be out quick because you're worried about the pressure? That was my biggest concern about it. Losing Bach is huge, but I'm one to believe that the offensive line is a product of the unit, and this unit's dang good. And Billy Turner, yeah, he's not David Bakhtiari. I'm never going to confuse him for that, but he did well enough. I mean, it's Khalil Mack, and he held his own. Mack, that sack that Mack got went inside. But outside of that, you know, a little bit of pressure to be expected. But we're not going to see a lot better outside pass rushers, in my opinion. I mean, there's some good ones, don't get me wrong. But I thought he did fine. This line is gelling. They play good football. It's good enough. I'll put it that way. It's good enough. Another injury would probably be bad. But right now, this starting five can make the run.
What you believed, I think, really came to fruition because, okay, Turner, you could maybe call it struggling. Like you said, it wasn't his best game, but it wasn't detrimental. Like this wasn't causing plays to be blown up entirely. It was, you know, Rodgers maybe needing to leave the pocket a little bit quicker. His awareness kind of allows him to get around that. There were even a couple times I noticed Jenkins would just knock his guy over completely and rush over and then almost take Turner. I think it was Mack on one play. Just took Mack kind of one-on-one basically off of Turner as he was losing control there. Then I just thought, okay, with Jenkins on that side, if there's anything that does leak through, he can usually do enough to kind of to fix things. He did allow, I think Jenkins did allow a one-on-one pressure pretty bad. It might have been against Hicks. But outside of that, Jenkins was flawless, incredible. because there were times where, okay, Rodgers throwing the ball quickly, but there were also some plays where they had quite a lot of time in the pocket. I thought the whole collective of the five really played as a strong unit together, handled any double teams or any stunts or any little tricks the Bears tried to play with their pass rushers. It seemed like the offensive line was ready for anything. On the one play in particular, the long play to Valdez-Scantling, the 72-yard touchdown, which obviously requires a lot of time protection-wise, they actually had Mack as a defensive tackle rushing from the interior instead of the edge. And Lindsley and Patrick handled that perfectly as a double team, just totally took him out of the play and gave Rodgers all that time to step up and find Valdez-Scantling. So tremendous game all around. Wagner played really well. Was concerned a little bit with Wagner, you know, him leaving with an injury last week. Not sure exactly of his state coming into this week, but I thought he looked as fine as he has all season.
Yeah, agreed. You know, a knee injury and kind of worried about how is he going to look out there, and he played great. Yeah, the interior of our line, I have 100% faith in them. I know they're trying to move Mac around. I think when Roquan Smith went out, it kind of changed some of the little things they tried to do, because moving Mac inside and then maybe trying to blitz an inside linebacker or something, you know, even though blitzing Rodgers is not very smart all the time, but, you know, it kind of changed what they were trying to do. And when you take away their game plans, or if someone goes down, our line is going to be just fine. I would have liked maybe a little bit more in the run game, but this Bears defense is good. Let's not forget that. I think Hicks is a monster. That guy is just a load for anybody. And then you got an elite pass rusher. So you're not going to have a field day against this team, but hey, hats off to this line. They're good. We got a heck of a group. Aaron Rodgers kind of talked after the game. If you look, Billy Turner's on the left side last year, you know, he's at guard. And then you got Rick Wagner, who wasn't even on the team last year. So we have two new tackles out there, and we're not missing a beat.
Yeah, you know, last year, Bulaga and Bakhtiari, right? And now this year, you enter the playoffs with Turner and Wagner. It's going to be an adjustment. I think there are certain matchups in the NFC that could be quite problematic for the Packers, but we'll get to that in due time. We want to gloat more about beating the Bears. So, I will say, though, and again, you've been, the last two episodes, you've just been calling everything. Where are the Bears better than the Packers? Special teams. That showed out. That you could kind of tell of a difference right off the bat. And this isn't even, to be fair, this was actually this was fairly well played by the Packers. It's just Cordarrelle Patterson. He's kind of a real difference maker as a special teams player. And it got me thinking, and I've had this thought before. I think part of the problem too, it's not even coaching. The Packers don't properly invest in their special teams. Obviously, I mean, they've paid Crosby his whole career, and they're going to continue that. That's fine. The way J.K. Scott plays, would like to see them do the same. He's been a really good punter for them.
Or Bradley, just don't punt. I like that.
Or just don't punt. Try to avoid punting, obviously, is the key. But really, like, for the rest of the team, it's the, you know, it's reserved for the backups at other positions, right? Like, they don't. I think Matthew Slater with the Patriots, right? They've paid him handsomely his whole career, probably more than certainly what his offensive production is worth, but clearly not to what more than they're paying him what they think they value him at. And because he's been maybe the best special teams player in the league for a decade, like, to them, that's worth it, because even if he only catches two passes a year as a wide receiver, which is his official listing, he's still excelling on every special teams play for them. And that's such a huge difference maker. And I feel like the Packers don't really do that. I think of Jeff Janis. Okay, we'll all remember the two Hail Mary catches, but throughout his whole career with the Packers, Jeff Janis was an incredible special teams player, and I don't really care if he couldn't make it on offense, and it was just a break glass in case of emergency type receiver, but I thought he was worth, you know, $2 million, pay him that $2 million, keep him, instead of letting him go to the Browns, I think it was, just for special teams play, and to have that excellent play there. And I mean, Cordarrelle Patterson, great play. I you know, the longest, I don't even want to say second of football, because it literally 0 seconds expired on the clock, but that took so long to kind of figure out, him stepping out of bounds before touching the football to count as out of bounds, so it count as a kickoff out of bounds. Really smart play by a great special teams player, and it's guys like Cordarrelle Patterson and Matthew Slater I think the Packers need to maybe invest in more.
if you hear Belichick preach about it all the time, you got to be good in every facet. And the Packers say it, but like you say, I don't think they invest in it like that. And for whatever reason, we can't just be competent. Having Jeff Janis and having a gunner like that, when Janis did that, it was every punt that dude was down there, right, making plays. And then, we don't have that now, and it really shows. It's every week. It's like, oh, God, what's going to happen this time? It's not good. Well, and I did that mock draft last week, and I had Josh Jobin there. First play of that Alabama game, going off pick here. He was down the field and making a hit before the guy got to the 10-yard line on a kickoff. I'm like, he'd be our best special teamer right now. It's just – it needs to improve. I hope, maybe just with the weird season it is this year and not being able to practice it or, for whatever reason. But it's definitely something this offseason I hope they address, because you don't want to lose a playoff game because of blunders on special teams. It'd make me sick.
And I mean, when the game was still close before the Packers really broke it open, Tavon Austin fumbles a punt return. I mean, a great job by the defense to really hold the Bears, get them off the field, and you just suddenly give them right in the red zone. Not too happy with Tavon Austin on that one. But I mean, and they said in the broadcast, there was not a Packers player around when he fumbled. Like, that's also on the rest of the coverage team too. They're not necessarily blocking for him, although you want to give him space, right? So you don't want to crowd him either. So Austin's maybe just a temporary fix there. Does seem like, if Tyler Irvin was healthier and they could feel like they could trust him on a snap in, snap out, that would be his job, and they wouldn't even have brought in Austin in the first place. So it really does see like punt returners somewhere where they're maybe going to have to address next season. I will say I did like Malik Turner as a kickoff returner, but he also as a gunner, I thought was doing pretty good. Maybe not quite Jeff Janis level, but there were sides there. So I'd like to see them keep Malik Taylor around. I think, it's maybe showing a couple of the reasons why they kept him initially on the 53-man roster instead of a guy like Reggie Bangleton, who I was really excited about. And so maybe Taylor kind of evolves into that role of a good special teams player that they maybe hopefully keep for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's how you make the roster, right? When you make plays on special teams, that's huge. You need those players. Like, you build your roster from the bottom up, not from the top down. So those are the guys you need to get better. With the Tavon Austin thing, I mean, this guy's been really good for, his whole career on punt return. So kind of fluky, but that's just like the Packers. I don't know if it's like the Packers curse where, our special teams is going to find a way to make a mistake. Now, hats off to this defense, because that could have changed the game. I mean, that was one of those field tilting plays, and our defense rose to the occasion. And that's a huge swing right there. And our defense, they shut it right down. Tip my hat that this the difference from last year to this year, this team, you can't break them. Bad things happen and they come out there and the defense will pick it up, or the offense, do something great to keep this team around. It's pretty special.
I believe that was the third drive? Like, or I guess it would have been the second Packers drive, I think, right?
Yeah.
But it happened early in the second quarter, right? And just two really long offensive possessions by both teams, both leading to touchdowns, took up the entire first quarter and then some. First or second play of the second quarter, the Packers scored their touchdown to tie it 7-7. And that was it. That was the first two drives. So it does seem like it's not the first time it's happened to the Packers. The defense is going to be very bend, don't break, right? We'll force them to take their time. They're not going to score quickly against the Packers. That aspect has been really absent from opposing offenses for a good portion of the season, at least the last half. I mean, really, Dalvin Cook, right? The Colts, right? Pittman. That's probably the last big play that they've allowed on defense. The special teams, that's something else. But so the defense has done a really great job of, if you're going to score on us, you're going to have to take time off the clock. And the Packers are fine because they want to shorten the game too. It seems like other teams kind of trying to do that. I feel like they used to be afraid of that in the past, right? Although taking time away from Rodgers. But now the Packers they're fine running the football a lot with the floor, short, quick possessions, long drives that are short, quick passing to lead to long possessions, long drives that they're not, I mean, and they can score big plays. They showed it on the 70-yard pass to Scantling. But the first drive of the game, I thought it was mastery by the Packers, really. Taking what the Bears gave them, methodically getting down the field and then you score a touchdown and not being afraid of other teams running out the clock because the Packers feel we can kind of tilt the favor and have long possessions ourselves. And you know what? Shorten the game down, give it fewer time for the other team to make a big comeback after the Packers get a lead, right? That's the thinking there. Obviously, that doesn't work so much if the Packers get behind.
I think that, you know, ever since, you know, that Viking game, you know, in the second half of the season where this Packers defense is the top 10 defense right now, you know, you can argue all you want. They've been playing top 10 football. And that's Mike Pettine's MO. Like, he's scheming for that. Hey, if you guys want to dink and dunk and move the ball down the field, that's fine. We're going to tighten up in the red zone. You're going to kick field goals. We believe we can score touchdowns all day long on anybody. Sooner or later, we're going to separate. You're going to have to come out of that, and we're going to get that turnover, or we're going to get that sack. And that's hard to beat. You know, if you, like you said, you know, let's shorten the game. Well, it's you limit their explosive plays, and they got to play, you know, Green Bay football where we're going to do that. The only difference is we're scoring touchdowns. It works, you know. And that's just trusting what we got out there. We have, you know, the pass rushers to make that play when we need it. We got a secondary that's just, it's humming right now. The two safeties are the best combo in the league, in my opinion, right now, playing wise. It works, right? Don't let anybody get behind you, beat you deep, and make them. It's kind of simple football. You know, the more plays you do, eventually there can be a mistake in there. That's just the percentages, right? There, eventually you're going to make a mistake, or eventually we tighten up in the red zone and you're not going to get in there. So it works. It's a team as a whole trusting that what we can, if we can do what we're going to do, we can stop you from what you want to do.
And I will say, I felt in this game, the defense seemed to just get better as the game went on. The only touchdown was the Bears' opening drive. Everything else was field goals. So the red zone, they really tightened up. And I mean, even then, they had to run quite a few plays in the red zone just to get in. Finally, a 2-yard rushing touchdown. You know, the only weakness really to the Packers is inability in short yardage defensive situations. And I mean, how many fourth downs did the Bears convert in this game? They're all fourth and one, right? And I think the ones they didn't convert, it's because they passed. Really, I don't know why you'd ever, as much as, you know, you draw percentages and draw stuff away, I don't know why a team would ever run or whatever pass in a short yardage situation against the Packers, because they just have an inability. Even when Clark gets off a block and blows up a play, it's still going to be a 1 or 2 yard gain. Like they've just have that inability to really penetrate at all. But it's been solid across to where they're only getting 2-3 yards. So it's good in that, but it's really, you really hope you hold teams outside the 5-yard line. You know, they're at the 6-yard line, they're okay. But as soon as they get inside the 5, it seems like they're bound to score at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, the Bears had nothing to lose. I mean, they're playing for their lives here, which essentially that's in the playoffs too. But you're not going to see teams go for it on fourth down that many times in the playoffs unless they're down or whatever. Because, like you said, eventually you get that stop, or eventually, you know, something bad happens and now you're behind the ball. So, you know, hey, David Montgomery, I have learned to appreciate a lot more than I did probably 2 months ago. The guy's a tough physical runner, and we held him to 3.1 yards a carry, you know, 66 yards. Granted, he had some in the passing game too, but yeah, it was nothing major. Like you said, that, you know, 3 yards here, 3 yards here. Well, if you're going for it on fourth down, that's fourth and one. Quarterback can fall forward and pick up a yard, right? Until he doesn't. But yeah, I agree. I don't know why they would pass on it. Who knows? That I'm happy that they did, but yeah, we knew what they wanted to do, right? They wanted to use Montgomery. You know, for the most part, we bottled him up. I mean, Robinson, who has been killing teams the last month, he was a non-factor. Mooney, you take away that 150-yard reception, he had, what, 11 catches for the other 40, kind of a non-factor. Everything was underneath. So Cole Kmet, the first-round pick, probably had maybe one of his best games as a pro, but even still, it was nothing to hurt us when tight ends used to kill us. Now they're not really factors. So good game plan all around on defense.
I would almost say liability, although, you know, Kmet did produce, but also costly fumble. I think there's a very obvious player for Packers player of the game, as much as, you know, there's 2-3 guys that are all at the top of their position league wide, and we really haven't given it to them yet. So like really any of the three of them could, but really one player to me was really making a difference. And you talked about it, shutting down Robinson. He was never open against Alexander. I think there was, it's funny because I thought Trubisky, well, no one ever is, right? But I mean, Robinson's the one guy, because of his height, he can be not open, but still make the catch, right? And you kind of worry about that, but like Alexander really wasn't even giving him that type of opportunity. I thought Trubisky actually did a really good job finding the open players. He made very few mistakes. When he did make a mistake, it was costly. I think about one of the few times where I thought Robinson got enough separation to maybe make a catch was on that an end zone shot. I can't remember which drive it was, but it's the one where Kevin King should have had an interception. Trubisky threw it right at him. I have no idea what Trubisky was doing there. He threw that ball behind Robinson, but way too short for Mooney on the fade route to get it. And it's almost like he couldn't decide which one to go after. So he kind of almost threw it in between them, right? Which is the worst thing you could do.
Jump ball. Yeah. Well, not really a jump ball, but yeah, just kind of threw it in that direction. Yeah.
It seemed like Robinson may have had, if Trubisky threw that at the pylon, Robinson would have had a chance to maybe stretch out. I don't know that Alexander would have been able to get it. That was maybe the most amount of separation he had got against him all game. And Trubisky messes up by not even really, I don't know who gets counted as that target. I suppose it's Robinson is maybe a little bit closer to the ball than Mooney, but it really did seem like Kevin King was the target on that play.
Even with Alexander, at the end of the game, when the game's over and Jimmy Graham catches that on the flat, he could have let him walk in, and he was like, hell no, you're not scoring. I don't care. It was just, that's that dog in him that I love. Like, he's like, you guys aren't getting anything, even this game's over, you know? And I think that just sums up how this team plays. Like, it doesn't matter if we're up by 40, we're not going to give you anything more. You want to throw underneath, we're going to shut it down. So, he had a great game.
Robinson, two catches for 37 yards, and they were both incredible catches, both against Kevin King. Especially the second diving one. I thought King defended that perfectly. He did everything you could. And you force Trubisky to make a really good throw. You force Robinson to make an incredible catch. So you take that as it will. Okay, you don't mind there. But really, it's one of the biggest plays involving Robinson was that fourth down play we're talking about. Trubisky rolls out. And Za'Darius Smith, I think, constantly throughout this game was so key at creating the pressure for other players. And I mean, in this play, he forced Trubisky to roll out and really forced him to get rid of that ball quicker than he should have. And Chandon Sullivan ended up being on Robinson on that play and made an incredible play. One of the best plays Sullivan's made all year. And he's made a lot of good plays. I know the PFF grades don't look so kindly on him, but I thought Sullivan's been having a pretty good season. But to knock that pass away from Robinson, that's a big threat of a receiver to make the catches. So don't even let it get to him like that. Because if you let it get to his hands and try and knock it out, he's probably too strong for Sullivan to be able to knock that away. It was a play where smart on the Bears put Robinson in the slot. They had Graham out wide, so Jair Alexander ended up covering Graham on that play, and it forced Sullivan to cover Robinson, but he, you know, didn't let him make the catch. So shout out to Sullivan there. Shout out to Za'Darius Smith, who pressure on that play. Christian Kirksey sack, I think that was all created by Za'Darius Smith causing pressure. He got in so quickly, forced, I think it was Jimmy Graham, to have to double team in and let the free guy go. And I think Kirksey timed it well to kind of delay it, let the block set up, and then get the free run. But that was all Za'Darius Smith drawing all that extra attention, really forcing the decisions by the Bears' pass protectors.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Z was, like you said, you know, like when you play the Packers, like, okay, we got to know where he's at and all this. And I think it freed up Gary a lot too, because when they were a few plays around the same side, Gary was a monster again too. He didn't have a sack or nothing, but that guy was in the backfield all game long too, just getting close, just getting enough to maybe force them to throw it before they wanted to. But yeah, Z, I don't know, that was the fastest Christian Kirksey looked all year too, coming off that edge. But yeah, there was nobody there to block him because everybody had to account for Z, or they, you know, cheated a little bit too much for him. So when you're a great pass rusher and you're an unselfish guy like that, hey, that's awesome. So yeah, good point right there with Z.
All right, so come to the end of the episode now, and slightly hinted at it, kind of already given my answer. To me, there were, it's good, maybe one really strong case, but two also maybe equally good cases for Packers player of the game this game. Okay, Rodgers, Adams, they were amazing. Yes, we know that. Jenkins, incredible. We've already kind of highlighted them, but specifically three Packers players that all rank among the best players at their positions that we haven't given Packers player of the game to. And I thought all three deserve cases, specifically on the offense. You know, you could have given it to really any of the offensive linemen, because I think we were both expecting better pass rush for the Bears and really to not have as much time. And it was quite amazing. So to live up to those expectations and even surpass them, I think any offensive lineman deserves credit. I specifically look at Corey Linsley, though, because he's been such a huge factor when he's been on the field this year. And I thought, great job today, really helping identify, you know, there's a lot of threats for the Bears in terms of pass rushers, Hicks and Mack. And when those guys move around, it's tough to identify where they are sometimes. But I thought he always figured out if he had to double team somewhere, he was always in the right spot. Generally, you're probably always going to double team with Patrick. You don't really need to double team with Elgton Jenkins very often, right? So that makes it a little easier. But I just thought Linsley played so well. And then defensively, Za'Darius Smith or Alexander. I think you can pick your choice between them. So I don't know if you had any other player in mind, but were those you know, the three players you were thinking of, Jesse?
No, actually, I had three different ones. So
gotta love this.
We have six guys. Yeah. Well, first of all, before we get into that, for me, it probably should have been MVS if he just catches that dang second pass.
Yes, I was thinking that too. As soon as he dropped that second pass, well, no, he's not getting it now. He might have before then.
On defense, our highest graded guy on PFF and former Bear, we could go with Adrian Amos. He had a hell of a game again in another pick against his former team. So that's awesome. Offense. So I know we haven't gave it to Godgers yet, but hey, he broke his former record MVP season, beating the Bears 4 touchdowns. We got to give it to him eventually, right? So he's in there for me. And another guy. Okay, this guy's under the radar. How about Dominic Daphne? Okay, he caught one pass, 13 yards, caught a touchdown. But in the run game, in his blocking, it really showed up. He has become a pretty nice, like, H-back kind of guy. You know, basically a nobody. I don't even think Packer fans knew who he was last week when he was in the game. And he's actually making a difference when he's in there. So he'd be the dark horse, but I don't expect him to get it. So that would be my three for me. But I'm open to debating on any of them.
And to be fair, you know, you could give it to Rodgers any week. I think we did give it to Rodgers, I believe, the Saints game. Or at least I...
Okay.
I think my rationale in that game was he did it without Adams and was able to do it and like in a game where they really needed to score whatever it was, 38 points, because the Saints scored 30-plus as well. I thought that was one where, okay, this is... Without Adams for Rodgers to do that, I think that was quite special. I still feel like going Jair. I thought this was maybe Robinson, just again, because of the height, of one of the tougher tests that Alexander would face all year. And I thought he, you know, zero receptions allowed to Robinson, right? It was both times it was King in coverage. So I guess Alexander's only reception in coverage was the Cole Kmet reception. And then he forced a fumble. So it was actually good that he allowed the catch, because it allowed for a turnover. So I just think this was the game to give it to Alexander personally.
Let's do it. I got no problem with that. I mean, when teams don't even look your way because you're going to take away their best player, I mean, like you said, we could give it to Rodgers any week. We could certainly give it to him any week, too, because I think he's separated. Well, I don't even think it's a debate. He's the best corner in the league, and it's not even close this year. So, yep, tip my hat to Jair Alexander.
Just the argument of the corner debate. You know, Stephon Gilmore, reigning defensive player of the year, really struggled this year, dealt with injuries as well. Seemed like Tre'Davious White may have also taken a step back. So, I mean, those would be maybe the two biggest roadblocks to that role. Maybe Jalen Ramsey is the only other one, but, you know, Alexander's right up there with all four of them. Like, that's a top tier there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Marlon Humphrey, I think that guy in Baltimore, he's on the verge too, because he's awesome. They put him on an island too, but none of them are Jair. They're just not right now. So that's awesome. Glad to have him.
Yeah, and we're glad to have you all listening to the Full Press Packers pod. You can follow us on Twitter at @FPC_Packers. Jesse's at @Hall_JHall1212. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app. And we will return with a playoff preview. I'm thinking we'll do a wild card preview. Obviously, it doesn't involve the Packers, but we can kind of look at all the other playoff teams involved and maybe a specific eye towards the NFC teams, potential divisional round opponents as well. So look forward to that in the next episode. Jesse, any final regular season thoughts?
Maybe not regular season, but I will say hopefully all the Packers stay away from everybody. No one comes up with a positive test, and go Pack, go.
Yeah, that fear is always there. And you know, stay healthy too. especially, you know, in light of what happened last week, but certainly any week it's the same case. And like every week, we'll always be here on the Full Press Packers Pod.